Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Starting with the NFL, another day and another profile on Baker Mayfield. I'll be real. I think you already know this. I cannot get enough. This time, it's in GQ. And you know what that means, right? If it's an NFL player getting profiled in GQ in August, somebody is going to get lit on fire. And it's going to be awesome. And I'm going to love it. Remember, last year, it was Jalen Ramsey. Ramsey was saying that Bills quarterback Josh Allen, quote, is trash. I don't care what nobody say, he's trash, end quote. He then chased that with, quote, Flacco sucks. Hey, I played him 2 years in a row. He sucks, end quote. Normally saying something sucks is not a take, unless it's Jalen Ramsey saying that Joe Flacco sucks, and then it's awesome. So, when Baker Mayfield sat down with Clay Skipper of GQ, I knew it was going to be good. When Baker sits down with anybody, I know it's going to be good. Because somebody or something is going to get roasted. And chances are, they'll deserve it. And it was everything I thought it would be. They sat down for an interview at Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse, where they've got a Baker Mayfield steak on the menu. When it was added to the menu last year, Baker said he was not sure that was a great idea. Quote, we had barely won any games. I didn't think I deserved it yet, end quote. He was asked if he deserves it now, and he said, quote, just because I know where we're headed, end quote. And so they're off and running. There's the usual reset of his journey from high school to Texas Tech to Oklahoma, including the fact that he transferred to OU without telling anybody. I mean, you knew he went there. Did you know he went there and didn't tell anybody? Bob Stoops told GQ, quote, when he comes up to me, he hadn't bothered to call anybody about transferring. You're not just transferring anywhere. We just ended up somewhere in the top five, six in the country the year before. We beat Alabama in the Sugar Bowl, and our redshirt freshman quarterback was the MVP of the game. He's going to come and transfer to Oklahoma to play quarterback? So it just tells you all you need to know right there, that this guy, he came up, introduced himself, had a big smile and a serious look on his face like, I'm going to do this, end quote. So again, the guy transferred to Oklahoma, one of the elite programs in the country, but did not bother telling anybody. He wasn't going to check and see if they had an opportunity or if he'd be a good fit. He just showed up and was probably thinking, why would I tell him? I'll just win the job when I get there, and then they'll know when I'm there. And, of course, there was the reminder of that flag plant after beating Ohio State in Columbus and the fact that he had to apologize for it. And if you think that that apology was heartfelt, it wasn't. On a scale of 1 to 10 of heartfeltness, he said the number is, quote, zero, zero, absolutely not, end quote. Kind of reminds me of Conor McGregor, right? I am sorry for absolutely nothing. And then there's that story about him meeting with teams before the NFL draft. This is good. The fact that he was pretty clear that he was going to go early in the first round. So he didn't bother studying playbooks for teams who were drafting in the later part of the first round. And those teams apparently did not appreciate that when he met with them. Like when he met with the Chargers, quote, they hated it. They're like, are you serious? I go, yeah, you guys have the 17th pick, end quote. Man, again, that is pure, unadulterated Baker. Man, that is so confident. That is so brash. That is so Baker Mayfield. Why waste time learning a team's playbook that you know is not going to pick you? That's smart. I love it. But that's not even the best part. The greatest moment. Well, let me read you the entire part from the column. Quote, near our booth, a SportsCenter segment about the New York Giants catches Mayfield's eye. Quote, I cannot believe the Giants took Daniel Jones, Mayfield says, about New York's much maligned draft day decision to spend the sixth pick on the quarterback from Duke, whose college record was a measly 17-19. Quote, blows my mind, end quote. I mean, seriously, did you catch that? Did you see what he just did there? This guy's just sitting there. doing an interview. He sees Daniel Jones on the TV, and he says, quote, "I cannot believe the Giants took Daniel Jones. Blows my mind."
Which sport? Baseball.
Wow. I got to be honest. The new iOS is jacking with me so badly, that beta on my iPhone. Anyway, so it's like, hey, Daniel, have some. Imagine you're Daniel Jones, you're minding your own business, walking along, and then Baker comes flying through the wall like the Kool-Aid man and lights you the hell up.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Can't believe they took him. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Jalen Ramsey saying that Josh Allen is trash. Can't believe that Baker just took that run at Daniel Jones. He may as well have said, Daniel Jones? What the hell kind of name is that? How vanilla is that? 17-19 record, 17-19 name. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Except that's not Baker taking a run for no reason whatsoever. I mean, I don't even think that's personal. I don't think he's bent about Daniel Jones. It's not like Jones got taken ahead of him. It's not like the Giants picked Jones over Baker. For Baker, this isn't personal to Jones. It's just business. This isn't between Baker and Jones. It's between Baker and the world. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? He's got a point. He's got a point. And that point is this. Quote, "Some people overthink it. That's where people go wrong. They forget you gotta win." End quote. And then he follows it up with this. Quote, "Either you have a history of winning and being that guy for your team or you don't." End quote. As usual, I see this guy working. His point is, winners win. This is a dude with a history of winning, and he's going to let you know about that. This guy wins. He always expects to win. And he's done it everywhere he's gone. And while many of you are killing this guy, talking junk, and hoping it all blows up in his face, he's just converting all of that hate into rocket fuel. And now he's running on that premium unleaded all freaking day. Every time he takes the field, for a game, for practice, whenever. Every time he goes into the weight room. So yes, I'm still all in on this guy. And if I had any other valuables left, I would push them to the center of the table too. Keep talking, Baker. Keep talking, keep winning, and most of all, keep doing you, because I'm here for it and I cannot get enough. It's always a good day when you roll out and you see another profile piece on Baker Mayfield, because you never know exactly what you're going to get, except more fuel, more heat. This guy's running on some rocket fuel. August 29th, we are joined by Utes head coach Kyle Whittingham. Kyle, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Appreciate it.
Good. Good to have you back. So we're about a week away from the season opener. How are practices going and how is life right now?
It's been good. You know, we had a good fall camp and got through it relatively healthy, which is, you know, the primary objective is to get your guys to the first game in good health. And so that was a positive. We started school yesterday, so we shifted from fall camp mode to in-season mode, and now we were about, 9 days out from the game.
Kyle Whittingham, my guest. You know, I had Yogi Roth from the Pac-12 Network on the show recently. He was talking about visiting your practices in the spring, and then in fall camp, he was raving about how competitive those practices were. In fact, Kyle, he was comparing them to his time with Pete Carroll at USC, which is really high praise. So how important are the intense practices when it comes to developing the culture and the identity that you want for your team?
Well, I think for us it's very important, and we've always had that MO. You know, we're very physical in practice and get after pretty good, but there is a fine line there. You got to be careful that you don't overdo it, because then you start getting guys too banged up and so forth. So I think we've struck a happy medium through the years, and you know, we pride ourselves on being a physical team, and that's something that you know, we hope doesn't change. I mean, that's what we're known for.
Right. Now, you're coming into the season coming off a Pac-12 South title last year, so you know there's going to be some attention on your team. Now you're top 15 in both preseason polls. You're one of the favorites to win the conference. From our conversations over the years, I know you're not going to plan a victory parade based on any preseason poll,
yeah.
And you mentioned your blue-collar mentality with the program. How do you go about helping the players deal with the attention they're now getting?
Well, we had an inclination way back in spring that we would have some preseason accolades, and so we start having those conversations during spring ball, saying, hey, you know, just block out the noise and go about your business and be able to essentially handle success. I mean, we had a pretty decent year last year. As you mentioned, we won the South, and so we knew there'd be somewhat of a target on our back and some praise for us going into the season, but you just got to block it out. I mean, you got to block out the noise. You got to go about your business, go about your process, just like you always do, and get to work and make sure you're ready in that opener.
Hey, let me ask you something. Ever wonder where your family comes from? Well, if so, you can discover more about them and learn about your own story by combining the Ancestry DNA test with billions of historical family records. Ancestry DNA gives you so much more than just the places you're from. Ancestry connects you to the places in the world where your story started. Using precise geographical detail and clear-cut historical insights, you can even trace your ancestors' journeys over time, following how and why your family moved from place to place. And to amplify your results, you can start a free trial on Ancestry and build a tree so your ancestors become more than just a name. This is absolutely fascinating. They've combined DNA results with over 100 million family trees and billions of records to give you more insight into your genealogy and origins. Only Ancestry can tell such a rich story with unique features that give a more complete picture about a person, like events that shaped them, how they made a living, and what they excelled in, all of that. Ancestry's unique features and record collections can give a more complete picture of people from your past, like the events that shaped them, how they made a living, even how long they attended school. And it is so easy to get started. Go to Ancestry.com/podcast today for 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. Again, Ancestry.com/podcast and get 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. Ancestry.com/podcast. It is fascinating. Do it today. Utah head football coach Kyle Whittingham joins us. Now, a big part of the accolades and the attention is quarterback Tyler Huntley and what he can do in the offense. In fact, how much has he grown since he first arrived on campus and even since offensive coordinator Andy Ludwig returned this year?
Yeah, he's grown exponentially, and he has had a tremendous fall camp. And, you know, he's voted team captain. We had our team captain vote just the other day, and he was voted one of the team captains. So his peers think a great deal of him. And we believe he's ready and poised for a big senior year. And we got a running mate in the backfield with him, Zach Moss, who we feel is the best running back in the Pac-12, if not one of the best in the country. And so we think we got some things going for us. But again, you got to go out and prove it, and we'll see where we are in 9 days.
And then in addition to that, he's got some guys that he can get the ball to. Have you ever had more depth at wide receiver than you have right now, and how much does that excite you?
I don't think we have. I think we've got more able bodies than we've ever had, and we've got some real playmakers outside. You know, Britton Covey, one of the top returning. In fact, he was our leading receiver last year. Returns, Damari Simpkins, Samson Nakua, Brian Thompson. We've got about seven or eight guys that we feel are ready to help us out.
We're talking to Kyle Whittingham. We're talking Utah football. Let me go back to Ludwig for a minute. He was a graduate assistant back in 1992. He was the offensive coordinator from 05 to 08. He said that when he came back, quote, "So much has changed, but yet so much is the same," end quote. And then he went on to say that the leadership and the vision is the same, but the players are better and the facilities are better. What's it like for you to have him back?
It's been awesome, and we had a great run the first time he was here, and it culminated his last year here with that undefeated season and the Sugar Bowl victory. And since that time, he's been a lot of good places and done a lot of good things. When it was time to replace our coordinator last year, who took a head coaching job, it was Andy was my first choice. He was the guy that we called, and he was excited about the opportunity. And you know, he's my first coordinator that I hired, and hopefully he's my last.
Part of what he's talking about, of course, is the culture of Utah football and how it has remained a constant. How do you go about making that a constant without it getting stale?
Well, you know, college football, there's a lot of turnover. It's not like the NFL where guys can be on the same team for, you know, 6, 8, 10 years. And each year, obviously, you lose your senior class, a new group of freshmen come in, and it just kind of self-perpetuates itself. I mean, it's a situation where the young guys that come into the program learn from the older guys how things are done, what the expectations are, what the standard is, and how we operate. And it just, like I said, it just self-perpetuates.
We're talking Utah football with head coach Kyle Whittingham. You know, Kyle, one of the defining characteristics of Utah football over the years, of course, has been that defensive front. And the talent that this group has seems to be pretty self-evident. You know, I don't want to get too carried away, but might this group be one of the best you've ever had?
I think it's got the potential to be, and we have three seniors who are tremendous players. All three, in my estimation, will be playing on Sundays, and you know, being able to make a career out of this. And below them, and some of the underclassmen, we have some real talented guys as well. So I'm saying that this could very well be the most talented and deepest defensive line group we've had, and that is saying something because we've had some pretty good groups in the past.
I'm glad you mentioned Sundays. I want to ask you about one of your former players, and believe it or not, I want to ask you about a punter, Mitch Wisnowski. Man. Yeah. He's a fourth-round pick of San Francisco. I know you know where I'm going with this. He's also handling kickoffs for the 49ers. Last night, he absolutely laid out a Bronco return man. What kind of a player did San Francisco get when they drafted Mitch?
He's a fiery competitor. He's first of all, he's got a big time leg. I mean, he has the strongest leg that I've ever seen in person, and can just boom the football. But he's a tremendous athlete. He could have played linebacker for us. He's 6'2" plus and 222 pounds, and run a legitimate 4.5. I mean, when he was here, he was you know, just incredible, and we utilized him a lot. You know, he ran several fake punts for us, and he made some of those plays on kickoff for us as well. And it was exciting to see him do that last night. That was enjoyable to see.
It was tremendous. I thought it was awesome. Now, when he was drafted, there was a question in some parts about taking a punter that early. You place a lot of value on special teams, which is something that some coaches and teams might overlook a little bit. Why are the special teams so important in your mind?
Well, they win games, bottom line. I mean, if you're strong in special teams, we figure that's going to win you two or three games a year just on that merit alone. And you're right, we've had tremendous special teams here. You know, Matt Gay, our place kicker, was drafted in the seventh round just this past draft, is doing very well down in Tampa Bay. So those two guys are great weapons. They're big shoes to fill. You know, we're starting over essentially with the specialists. But we place a high premium on special teams. Our kids buy into it. They understand the importance of it, and it's just been a strong suit for us for a lot of years.
Sure has. Utah head football coach Kyle Whittingham joins me for another couple of moments. Kyle, I want to ask you, because back in spring, you recorded a message that you tweeted out to raise awareness about mental health for student-athletes. As you know, there can be a lot of pressure on student-athletes. How do you go about helping them with the mental health side of things and creating that environment where they can talk about things when things do get tough?
Well, I just think it's a matter of them understanding that as coaches, we care. We care about them as, you know, on a personal level, and it's not just all about football. And I feel, you know, our assistant coaches do a great job fostering those relationships and letting the players know that, you know, we're there for them. And I do what I can do as well as the head coach. It's, you know, it's just a matter of them knowing that we care. Our doors are always open. And anything they want to talk about, you know, feel free to come in and visit with us, and we'll help you out as best we can.
You know, you're now the longest tenured head coach in that conference, and you go out this hard. I mean, that's a grind that can wear anybody down. So what's your approach? How do you go about staying fresh and fired up and on top of your game?
Well, first of all, we have unfinished business. You know, we reached a milestone for our program by winning the Pac-12 South last year, but we fell short in the championship game, and so we have a lot more that we want to accomplish and goals that we've set, and that keeps me going. I mean, you know, we've got a lot more that I think we can get done here, and time will tell, but you know, that's really keeps you know, the fire in my belly is there because of the things that we want to accomplish.
Thing is, though, that's still part of the grind, right? You know, how do you stay fresh for the grind? You keep grinding. You've also talked in the past about how skiing is something that, quote, cleanses my soul.
Yeah.
What is it about skiing that's got that kind of impact, and are you still getting out as much as you'd like on the slopes?
I'm getting out as much as I possibly can. I'm blessed to be 15 minutes from the resort that I ski at, and just getting up in the mountains. I mean, in that clean air and just up there, and you put your headphones in and your goggles on and your helmet. Nobody knows who you are. You can just kind of, you know, be incognito and do your thing, and I just love it. I mean, to me, it's my passion. And there's not much else I'd be rather be doing than up on the mountain skiing.
I mean, you've got some world class mountains there. In fact, what's your favorite mountain? Where do you go?
Snowbird. Snowbird is my place of choice. I get a season pass through every year, and like I said, I can get from my driveway onto my boards in 15 minutes, and I'm going.
I skied it as a kid. I remember Snowbird. Alta, Solitude, Snowbird.
Oh, yeah.
All good
yeah.
stuff, right?
Great stuff. Great stuff, yep.
Utah, number 14, the preseason AP poll. They are at BYU on August 29th. Kyle Whittingham is the head coach of the Utes. Kyle, I appreciate the conversation and the relationship. Great to have you back. Thank you.
All right, Jim. Appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
You got it. All right, so let's go back to the exhibition season. I think we can all agree on one thing, right? NFL exhibition games really don't matter that much. There are few things more meaningless than stats from an exhibition game. In fact, the only thing more meaningless than stats from an exhibition game are stats from a training camp practice. This is why I thought it was a little bit weird when some folks got all worked up about Jimmy Garoppolo throwing 5 interceptions in practice last Wednesday. I mean, sure, you never want to see your alleged franchise quarterback throw 5 picks in a practice. You certainly don't want to see him throw 5 straight picks on 5 straight attempts in a practice, which is exactly what he reportedly did. And yes, I agree, it is kind of weird. And no, I have never heard or seen anything like that before, at least not from an alleged franchise quarterback. But still, that is not a reason to panic. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of reasons why a guy like that might throw 5 straight picks in practice. Maybe he was trying to test himself. Maybe he was trying to test the defense. Maybe the Niners' defense know his tendencies more than an opposing team might. That's why last night's exhibition game was the rare Monday night exhibition game that was actually worth checking out. Because that was going to be Jimmy G's first game action since he obliterated his ACL last season in week 3. And while it was good to see him back on the field from a health standpoint, that was really rough from a football standpoint. I mean, really, really rough. On the opening drive, he handed off twice. He had a pass knocked down. And then this.
3rd down and 6. Niners need to reach the 47-yard line. 4-man rush. Quick pressure by Chubb. Pass thrown and contested and intercepted by the Broncos sideline. Intercepted there by Isaac Yiadom.
Credit Broncos radio. So, exhibition game or not, that was pretty ugly. That was ugly. Then again, that'll happen. Like, unless you're Nate Diaz, you can't just show up after a long layoff and just start smoking fools and killing the game. Anyone else is going to have some rust to knock off, including Garoppolo, but not Nate Diaz. Garoppolo, you know, he's got to get into a rhythm with his receivers, develop that chemistry after so much time away. It's only one drive. Cut this guy some slack. It's only one drive. Like, you know he'll be better on the second drive. No, he won't. A deflected pass, a broken up pass, 3 and out. Just 2 drives. Has to be better on the 3rd drive. How about that 3rd drive? Incompletion, then a completion. Finally. Yes, we did it.
We did it.
Completed pass. Now, how far did that go, that completed pass? Let's not get into that just yet.
Let's not get into that yet.
Actually, why don't we get into that? A screen pass that went for 0 yards. And that was the end of his night. So before I read that final stat line, let me remind you, exhibition game stats do not matter that much, right? Got it. Remember that, because Jimmy G's stat line from last night was 1 for 6, 0 yards, 1 interception, and a 0.0 rating. 0.0. The true, rare, perfect game for a quarterback. So what did Jimmy think about his performance?
You know, obviously a little frustrated, but that's the NFL. You know, it's unfortunately we don't get to play the whole game right now. So, you know, it's you only get so many plays. You wish you could be out there for more so you could bounce back and everything, but it is what it is, the preseason right now, so just got to take it in stride.
Right. You got to take that in stride, and you can't get too worked up about the results from last night. And if I had a buck for every time an athlete mindlessly muttered, "It is what it is," I'd be sitting somewhere on the beach earning 10% of my money smashing Heinekens. But again, it was his first game. It was only an exhibition, which is why any of you folks from Nick Mullins Nation or the C.J. Beathard Army trying to get a quarterback controversy going need to take a step back. I know the numbers from last night. I know the numbers from last week's practice. I know the numbers from last season. I know you can make the case that Mullins had better numbers than Jimmy G when he replaced him last year. I know all that. I also know the numbers on Jimmy's contract for this year, which is exactly why he's going to get a long leash, because they need to know what they have in this guy, and they need to see him get back to being the guy that they thought he was. because that five-pick practice and last night's showing has got to be making folks a little bit nervous and a little bit uncomfortable. I'll finish this thought in a minute, but just keep this in mind. You know it's awkward when the biggest highlight from the night, and save the thought, I'm not going to run it yet. You know it's awkward when your franchise quarterback makes his first start after coming back from a knee injury, and the biggest highlight of the night did not involve him, but rather your kicker. Summer's heat can be draining on your vehicle's battery. Rising temps can cause battery fluids to evaporate. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts right now. Have your battery tested free of charge. If your battery does need to be replaced, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts will help you find the exact superstar battery that fits your car or your truck at a guaranteed low price. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. We are joined by Chris Long. Chris, good to have you on. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How you doing?
Good. Good, dude. Good to run you down. So you announced your retirement in May. Chris, let me start right there. Training camp is here. Preseason's underway. Is any part of you itching to play again? What's it like right now?
Well, listen, if I could roll the ball out there and take my Sunday meds and go just play on Sunday, heck yeah, I'd go play football. And I would do it for a few more years. But what went into my decision was everything that comes in between, and Monday through Saturday, time away from my family, and probably a reduced role in Philly. I mean, that was what I was told up front, is that, you know, I was more of a 10 snap a game guy. So, my role had kind of gone by the wayside, and so I didn't really want to explore playing somewhere else. I thought about it, but Philly was so good to me and so awesome on the tail end of my career. I thought this would be a good time to kind of walk away and not get run out of the league and be healthy.
I appreciate that response. Chris Long joining us. Now, when you and I have talked over the years, one thing has always been clear, that football was an important part of your life, but it was not your entire life. In other words, you always struck me as somebody who would be able to move into retirement pretty easily. So what has the transition been like for you?
Well, I'm not going to lie. It was something I was afraid of for a long time, you know, Jim. It was especially in the middle of my career when I was the most that's all I had, I mean, was football. Before the foundation took off, before, you know, starting a family, before all that stuff, you know, it's easy to get your identity completely wrapped up, especially when you're in the prime of your career, like say I was in New England, or say I was not in New England, I wasn't in the prime of my career, in St. Louis, when I have 40 sacks in 4 years and I'm a team captain and that stuff, it bleeds into your identity. And then, obviously, maybe the best thing that ever could have happened to me existentially was getting IR'd twice and kind of, you know, getting knocked down in the dirt a little bit and having to rebuild myself. And part of that rebuilding is realizing that simultaneously all this stuff's going on, your foundation, your family. And for me, for something that was so scary for such a long time, I love retirement. It is a lot of fun, and I get to kind of just take a deep breath. I'm not on a calendar. I'm not on a schedule. I'm very busy. But it's not like football busy, and it's different. So, and my body feels great.
Chris Long is my guest. I'm anxious to talk to you, Chris, about the foundation. I'm going to do that in 1 minute. You know, one of the things I always talk about, guys who played the game at the highest level for a long time, are the matchups that they loved. Who were the guys you loved going up against, and who were the guys who gave you the toughest battle?
No doubt about it. It's a great question. I mean, I think matchups make fights, man, and that's no different in the trenches and when it comes to pass protection. Immediately, I should mention Lane Johnson. The last couple of years, I've had to practice against him a lot in camp and in practice. I think he's one of the best. He's a guy who's a tough matchup. And if you watch some games where over the past few years he was able to kind of, I want to say neutralize, but contain Khalil Mack or Von Miller, the likes of players like that, and really do just a magnificent job technically, I really admire his game. You know, battles I loved, when I was in the NFC West, it was a bloodbath every week. It was those 49ers offensive lines, Frank Gore, you know, it was Iupati, it was Anthony Davis, Staley, all those guys, really physical groups in Seattle. It was that Tom Cable, Marshawn Lynch stuff. And I remember a guy named Breno Giacomini, who doesn't get a lot of pub, but he was a guy who would fight you beyond the echo of the whistle, playing against guys like that, just battling it out. I'll never forget perennial battles like that in my NFC West days. Some of those Rams D lines we had, were the best units I've ever been on, and we went against some really strong physical teams as well.
Such a good conversation. Chris Long is my guest. Now, Chris, you mentioned the Patriots. You recently wrote a piece for Sports Illustrated's website, and you shared some thoughts about Tom Brady. Rather than rehash those thoughts, what was your overall impression about him from afar and then as a teammate?
Well, you know, first to clarify that whole thing, I think if 95% chances he stays in New England, but if people are betting the field, you know, my point is that San Francisco is the 5%, and there's nobody else in the conversation. So it's a total hypothetical. But when I got to know Tom when I was in New England, I was just struck by how down to earth he was, how he treats everybody in the building the same, and I think that's a really good barometer for what type of person you have in your locker room or on the team. And, you know, to Tom, everybody's your teammate, whether it's the 53rd guy on the roster or somebody who's not going to be there at the beginning of the year. And it's almost a foregone conclusion with some guys who are practice squad or some guys who are unsigned. But he treated everybody with respect. I always remember the first day I walked into the building, and I had a really good career in my own right, but, you know, there's only one Tom Brady. So I was keeping my head down, and I'm walking through the hallway, and he extends his hand. He says, "Hi, Chris, I'm Tom. Nice to meet you." And I'm like, "Yeah, no crap. You know, like, I know exactly who you are, dude. Like, you don't need to introduce yourself." He's that type of guy. He's meticulous, but he's not as uptight as people might think just watching him on the sideline. And he's a great teammate.
Chris Long is joining us. What a great story that is. Now, you made a really significant announcement on Twitter earlier this month, and I want to read this quote verbatim. August 10th, 2019 is the day I became a gin and tonic guy who drinks these things, so I know who I'm standing in solidarity with. Let me just say, Chris, I don't want to make this also about me, but on July 19th, 1991, Chris, I became a gin guy. Just a gin guy. Man, I love this. How is the gin and tonic life treating you so far, and what is your gin of choice?
The gin and tonic life has been good. I'm just a baby, man. You know, I mean, you know, with booze, I feel like everybody goes through phases, right? So you have a tequila phase, and then you don't even want to look at tequila like a year or two later. You know, I've always been a whiskey drinker. Really, the dark horse in my life right now is Japanese whiskey. I'm really into that. But as far as a clear liquor, I'm taking gin over vodka every time now. Somebody served me a gin and tonic at a My Morning Jacket concert in Queens last week, and I was blown away. I mean, it's just so flavorful, refreshing, and energizing. It was tremendous, and I had to have another and another. And then I found out that tonic water has a lot of sugar in it. So when I wrote that tweet, I didn't know. So the stock is down a little bit, but it's still one of the lead dogs in my arsenal.
My man, that is so strong. But you can still save this if you want to be blown away by something. And you're right, I've never been about that tonic life for the reason you mentioned. I just don't really like the way it tastes either. Just be a gin guy. I'm not saying you can live on it exclusively, but if you like it with tonic, try it straight up. Be careful how you do it, but it's an amazing thing. I've done this for a long, long time.
Do you infuse it? Are you one of those infusing people? Because I've heard you can infuse them.
I don't mess with them. I just go straight up.
Okay.
I just go straight up.
Okay.
I just go straight up. And less and less of that because it's a tough drink. But when it's good, it's great. Listen, you are never looking for praise or attention for the work that you do away from the field. That said, what does the Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year Award mean to both you, Chris, and your foundation?
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I think a lot of people who have opinions on the opposite end of the spectrum for me often remind me that I'm just doing it for attention. But I think that, you know, the Walter Payton Man of the Year stuff, man, it was a tremendous honor. I almost felt unworthy being up there with those guys. You know, and also you're cognizant of the fact there's so many guys that are nominees that are tremendous people who I quite frankly think are better people than me. So that's why I disagree with the designation being the best guy in the NFL. Now, if you're going to tell me, like, I'm the most productive guy in the NFL off the field, I do. You know, I am proud of what we've done as a foundation, you know, delivering clean water to over 200,000 people, you know, 60-plus wells in East Africa. We're doing work domestically with clean water. We've done educational space work. We work with our veterans. I have very hardworking staff led by Nicole Woody, and we really grind it out. And I never wanted to be one of those guys that was not putting in the equity. So it's cool for our foundation to get that love and that platform. And I was really afraid that when I retired, I wouldn't have the same reach. But with things like bringing Myles Garrett on to be our active captain in Water Boys, that's a huge domino for me. You talk about fear of retirement. That was one of my big fears. And, you know, things have only sped up because of moves like that. You know, you talk about a guy like Miles who's going to play, hopefully, God willing, another 10, 15 years. That's how good I think he can be and is. And to have him leading our charge with active players is monumental. It takes a lot of stress off my plate.
Speaking of stress, Chris Long, my guest, you're working with Gillette Deodorant and the Every Hero Sweats, Some Never Show It campaign. How did that first come to be, and why is that something that you want to be involved in?
Well, you know, when people approach you for partnerships, it's not always something that you're like, hey, listen, this is exciting and really aligns closely with what I do. But Gillette Deodorant has kind of brought this cool campaign to our doorstep with, you know, talking about the modern man, and a lot of people associate football players with kind of a benchmark for role models and athletes, right or wrong. I mean, that's kind of how people think, and there's little kids that look up to us. I think the ad highlights that, you know, not only are we these big, strong, tough football players, but we're vulnerable and we have interests outside of football, you know, whether it's a foundation, which so many guys have, families that they love dearly, passions off the field. And it was cool because we shot the ad at the Boys and Girls Club in Charlottesville, Virginia, where I've spent time before and done work, and then also UVA, which is near and dear to my heart. So it was a cool little personal twist, and I think it's a cool message.
Now, for those of you who do not know, quickly, the MLB Little League Classic is an annual game played between Major League teams in Williamsport. It's right near the site of the Little League World Series. You've got a couple of pro teams playing in a minor league stadium. They're not playing at the Little League Park. They're playing in a minor league stadium nearby. It seats 2,300 fans. And on that night each year, almost every seat is occupied by a Little Leaguer. It's cool, right? Really cool. Wholesome, right? Family friendly, right? It's all those things. Or at least it's supposed to be those things. And it was right up until Alex Rodriguez told the national TV audience that all the kids in America were going to die before their parents do.
This is the first generation of kids that will not outlive their parents. And to think that there's more kids today playing esports than physical sports, it's something as parents we have to really promote going outside and playing. Maddie, when we grew up, there was not, I mean, it was Atari, but you had to go outside and play for 4 or 5 hours. Kids today, too many times, choose to stay inside and play video games.
The hell did he just say? What the hell just happened? Did Alex Rodriguez, father of two, and soon to be stepfather of two more, just tell everybody that this generation of kids is going to die before their parents?
This is the first generation of kids that will not outlive their parents.
Way to lighten the mood, A-Rod. Way to bring mass child death into a Little League Classic broadcast.
This is the first generation of kids that will not outlive their parents.
Like, are you saying, you know, look at all these kids in this stadium. 2,300 Little Leaguers. Isn't it beautiful? Hey, one thing about them, they're not going to outlive their parents.
This is the first generation of kids that will not outlive their parents.
Why did he just say what he said? I mean, not only is that bizarre, pretty off-putting, pretty disturbing, and not even true, remotely true. It's like an exaggeration embellished, an exaggeration on roids. Look, I get that A-Rod loves to embellish things with roids, but maybe don't do it with the life expectancy of an entire generation of children. I mean, you see what this guy's doing here, right? He's making a plea for kids to get outside and play instead of staying inside and gaming. I get that. That might be the only thing that guy ever said that we can all agree on. That might be the only thing that we can all agree on that anybody's ever said. We're all with him on that. But maybe you just say that instead of saying this.
This is the first generation of kids that will not outlive their parents.
Man, get this dude a black cloak and a scythe. Freaking Death Rodriguez, at your doorstep, up in the booth. I mean, does this guy tell his own kids that he's going to outlive them every time they fire up the PS4? He just told that to every other kid and parent in America. Hey, listen, I can speak from experience on this topic. Like, our younger son, Logan, spends way too much time on his PS4. We have this discussion all the time. Like, school hasn't started yet. He might be listening. Hey, Logan, get the hell off your PS4. I mean, didn't we have this discussion like 3 hours ago? He spends way too much time on his PS4. It pisses me off. And it pisses me off that somebody who does not have kids gave it to him in the first place. Because I, for one, was not going to allow that crack into my house. That said, I'm pretty sure, even with that console 5 feet from his room, he's still going to outlive me. He and his brother both. You know, I'm middle-aged. They're teenagers. I've done the math. They're both going to outlive me. I'm fine with that. I'm guessing they are too. Now, let me go back and play the full clip, because there's a part in this clip that you may have missed, and it's nearly as curious as telling the entire country that they'll be alive to bury their kids. I mean, again, let me just digress. I don't know from experience, but I would imagine outliving your children is the worst thing ever. And this guy just told an entire nation that an entire generation of parents are going to do it. But, listen back as A-Rod associates esports with why we will all be making funeral arrangements for our kids soon.
This is the first generation of kids that will not outlive their parents. And to think that there's more kids today playing esports than physical sports, it's something as parents we have to really promote going outside and playing. Maddie, when we grew up, there was not, it was Atari, but you had to go outside and play for 4 or 5 hours. Kids today, too many times, choose to stay inside and play video games.
Of course, it should come as no surprise to anybody at all that A-Rod, who referenced esports, is one of the reasons why we will outlive our kids. Himself is invested in an esports company, invested his own equity into an esports company, and did so less than 3 years ago. I'm sure his partners on that investment are thrilled with him right about now. What a great spokesperson for the brand. I mean, the idea generally, when you're looking to make money off of an investment, is not to tell a massive TV audience that the product that you're invested in kills kids. Generally, that's the idea. Not always, but generally. But I guess that's not how they do things at A-Rod Corp. The guy was probably two innings away from candidly saying how much he hates J-Lo's music, about how ESPN is the worst company ever to work for. Tune in to Sunday Night Baseball this weekend for that. Memo to all parents: hug your video game playing kids extra tight tonight, because according to A-Rod, the entire generation is on the clock. And you'll be putting them in a pine box before you take your own dirt nap.
This is the first generation of kids that will not outlive their parents.
You know, I've heard the argument that back in the day, this is the first generation of kids that will do better than their parents. But I've never heard this is the first generation of kids that will not outlive their parents. I don't know, Alex. Medical research has greatly improved. Unless an entire generation of parents had their kids when they were 5, there's a pretty good chance you're wrong. Again, I'm not being morbid about this, and I understand that none of us, it's not for any of us to say when it's our time. I'm pretty damn sure that both my kids are going to outlive me, unless something tragic happens. And as much as I hate my kid being on that PS4, that's not going to be the reason he outlives me or doesn't outlive me. But I love that my man's got an investment in esports and is saying that it's killing off a generation of kids. Hey, Rod. Will Brinson is back. Will, what's up? How are you?
Jim, what's going on, man? Hope you're doing well.
Man, I'm doing great. It's good to have you back and lots to cover. Will, let me start with the 49ers. Now, if you're 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan, Will, what kind of thoughts were you having after seeing Jimmy Garoppolo show up the way he did last night and finish with a 0.0 rating?
It'd be like, Jim, I think if you bought a brand new BMW and then the paint fell off and it was like a Corolla. That's what you feel like watching Jimmy Garoppolo put up a 0-0 with one completion, one interception. And I get that, you know, I mean, he's still coming back from an ACL. He's, you know, he's still dealing with, you know, learning the scheme. He doesn't have some great wide receivers out there. He's playing against a tough defense, and it's the preseason. But this is a guy who has 10 career starts, only five in San Francisco. He's being paid $138 million. And when you start to look at the totality of what John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have done from a move perspective, I mean, you know, they look like geniuses when they made that Mitchell Trubisky swap to get extra picks. But then they end up with Solomon Thomas and Reuben Foster. Those both look bad. You know, they haven't necessarily hit any home runs. I mean, Nick Bosa's been a little banged up. And now Jimmy Garoppolo may or may not be good. I mean, we've seen him be good for a five-star stretch. But this is not, it's not just as simple as coming back from an ACL 11 months later and being great on the field. It's hard to do that, especially when you're working with new receivers, learning a new, you know, fairly new schematic system. And I would be a little bit worried given the close proximity of the season.
Imagine thinking you bought a BMW only to get it home and find out that it's really a Corolla. Will Brinson is my guest. Well done. You know, it is only the preseason. I thought you laid that out really well, Will. But when you look at how his contract is set up, how much pressure is there on Garoppolo this year?
A lot. And there's a lot on all three of those guys in terms of Garoppolo, John Lynch, and Kyle Shanahan. I mean, my guess, Jim, would be if things went really south for this team and they won four or five games, that you probably would see John Lynch maybe be the scapegoat, because I think Kyle Shanahan might have a little bit more cachet with how things worked out, and you know he's the actual coach. But yeah, I mean Jimmy Garoppolo is not safe. I mean there's a couple of different quarterbacks, Derek Carr's out there too, in terms of guys who, you know, if things go south, that the team might be willing to move on. I just don't know if this is a team that, if Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't play well and he plays really poorly or he's injured, that they can justify saying, all right, we just made a $138 million mistake. We're going to cut our losses and move on. They can save, you know, get $15, $20 million salary cap space. But, I mean, you know, this is still a really, really big error considering all of the quarterbacks that they passed on because they had traded for Jimmy Garoppolo. We're talking to Sean Watson, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, guys who look like true franchise quarterbacks. This would be a major, major blemish on both guys' record if this didn't work out.
Will Brinson, CBS Sports, senior writer, joining us. All right, Will, speaking of quarterbacks, let's talk contracts and Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys situation. Jones has said that Dak Prescott is a top-tier quarterback. Do you expect him to be paid like a top-tier quarterback?
If I'm Dak Prescott, I am certainly not taking one penny less than Carson Wentz. And it's not because you think you're better than Carson Wentz. It's just because of basic economics, Jim. I mean, this is a situation where Carson Wentz had a fifth-year option in play and had been injured. Dak Prescott's played 16 games every single year of his career. He wins division titles. He's the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year. I mean, he has a very, very good resume. And when you look at where he is, about to become an unrestricted free agent, it would be wild for him to take anything less than market value. And I think market value for him should be in that $33, $34, $35 million range. It's not about where he ranks in terms of total quarterbacks. It's about where he ranks in terms of being in line to get paid. And if you're a quarterback in 2019, we're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo, right? I mean, this is how you end up getting a huge contract, because you are the next in line and you are going to be a true free agent.
Preach, you and I are on the exact same page on this. I mentioned the same thing. It's all about timing. It's more about timing than anything else. And I agree with you. He should not settle for a dollar less than Wentz. Now, where does this leave Will Brinson, my guest? Where does it leave Ezekiel Elliott? The regular season, Will is getting closer and closer. Still no sign of a deal for Elliott. How do you see this playing out? And do you think this extends into the regular season?
Jim, like you and I both like casual flippant Burns, right? Like, I mean, I love the Zeke who, but Jerry, what is Jerry Jones thinking? I mean, like, what is he? You're in the middle of a contract negotiation with a guy who's mad that you won't give him market value for what a running back should earn when he's led the league in rushing yards per game every single year he's been in the NFL. And I realize Zeke's got the stuff off the field, but I don't think that this Tony Pollard thing is going to work out the way that Jerry Jones thinks it's going to work. And I think the more that he alienates Zeke by saying these things publicly, by pushing him away, by saying they don't want to give him the top-end market deal, the angrier it makes Zeke Elliott. And as a result, he might stay away and see what happens. And if the Cowboys, you know, they got an easy schedule out of the gate. They get the Giants, Redskins, and Dolphins. But if they go 1-2 in those games, their season is in jeopardy. And, I mean, you know, it's the NFL. Weird stuff can happen. And if they're 1-2, Zeke Elliott can get whatever he wants from Jerry Jones. I think right now he's still probably going to have to settle for something in the – $11 to $12 million range if he actually wants to get paid before the season.
Will Brinson joining us. All right, so where does that leave? Melvin Gordon is a noted Chargers fan. How do you see that negotiation going?
not very well for Melvin, right? I mean, this is a guy who, and I love Melvin Gordon. I played Madden with Melvin Gordon. I think he's a great dude. I understand why he's doing what he's doing. But the problem for him is that he's only played 16 games once. He's only been above 4 yards per carry once. If he wants to get paid before the season and he wants to get guaranteed money in his pocket, given that he's on a fifth-year option, given that there are two franchise tags left for the Chargers to hit him with, he's going to have to take something below the Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson group. He's going to have to settle for $10 to $12 million. And the Chargers wisely aren't willing to overpay for Melvin Gordon when they have Austin Eckler and Justin Jackson, both of who look pretty explosive. You know, out there doing good things on the field. So from Melvin Gordon's perspective, I feel bad for him. But from the Chargers' perspective, I understand why they're smart in holding the line.
Will Brinson joining us. Now, Will, you mentioned Mitch Trubisky. You've made the argument that the Chicago Bears look like a team that's going to regress based on Twitter. All right, based on Twitter, I need to ask. How much of that is because you hate the Bears and Mitchell Trubisky, and how much of that is actually based on fact?
No, it's all heavily rooted in deep scientific diagnosis and maybe a dash of hatred, Jim.
Right.
Look, I think when you look at this team, they had 27 interceptions last year. That is a ton. They scored 40-plus points with the defense. That doesn't happen. I mean, you look at the greatest – 85 Bears didn't score 40 points with their defense. And so, you know, there's just going to be a regression in terms of how many points are scored by the defense, how many turnovers they generate, the field position that the offense gets as a result of the defense stepping back. And that's before we even get into the idea that the guy pulling the levers, Vic Fangio, is now gone. He's replaced by Chuck Pagano, who runs a different scheme. They lost Adrian Amos, a budding star safety. They lost Bryce Callahan. And fans on Twitter will be like, well, he's a nickelback. That doesn't matter. There's 75% nickel out there, guys. I mean, like, this, he's a de facto starter. They lost multiple starters. You know, they were one of the healthiest teams in football last year in terms of the defensive starters. That's going to see some regression. And this is just a team that cannot put forth the defensive performance they put up last year.
Hmm. Will Brinson joining us. Now, Will, you were golfing recently, and somebody recently dropped an amazing phrase on you. The phrase will probably end up as a motto or on a tattoo somewhere. The phrase was, and I quote, "Ain't no law when you're drinking the claw." Set the scene for everybody. What was the scenario and the conversation that led to that?
Some friends and I went down to Mid Pines Golf Course in Pinehurst to have our annual fantasy football draft over the weekend. And I'm on the 16th green at Mid Pines, and I look over, and there's a guy on the 7th tee box, and he's just shotgunning a can of White Claw. And I was like, man, that's the way to do it. He's like, yeah, you got a shotgun for birdies. And I said, oh, the claw was taken over. And he said, ain't no law when you're drinking the claw. unfortunately, my wife has now found out about this saying and is threatening me with aggressive poolside behavior that I can't try to control because, as we know, Jim, ain't no law when you're drinking the claw.
Ain't no law when you're drinking the claw. So are you about that life? Do you like the claw?
Yeah, I do. I like the claw. The one brand that a podcast listener actually sent me It's called Arctic Summer, and it's out of Massachusetts, and it is some of the best like a spiked seltzer type drink I've had. Yeah, I mean, I kind of get into the refreshing, lighter, I don't mind opening myself up to a little hard cider, but that spiked seltzer stuff with the flavors, I'll get down with the claw.
Ain't no law when you're drinking the claw. Will Brinson, my guest. Hey, Will, really quickly before you go, speaking of the NFC North, the Packers have a new head coach in Matt LaFleur. We know this. There's been a lot of talk about the relationship between he and Aaron Rodgers. How do you like that fit of coach and quarterback?
I've drafted a lot of Aaron Rodgers, so I guess I like it, but it worries me, Jim. I mean, I think Aaron Rodgers' game for so long has been predicated on audibling at the line of scrimmage and doing different things than what the play called for, extending plays with his feet, making sort of playground-type football. And everything you hear about Matt LaFleur is he's very, I don't want to say rigid, but he believes the system is going to create the play. And so Aaron Rodgers is going to have to buy in wholesale in terms of being willing to operate exactly what Matt LaFleur tells him to do. But if he does that and they establish this run game and they can run more play action, this is a really dangerous team. The Packers have been, as Josh Hirschmeier said on my podcast, one of the worst teams over the last 4 years in terms of being not just running play action, but being effective in it. The Titans were one of the best last year, according to Football Outsiders data. And if they get that out of Aaron Rodgers, that dude rolling out with the defenses sucking in and him throwing it deep, that's a real dangerous proposition for other teams.
He is a senior writer for CBS Sports. He is the host of the Pick 6 NFL podcast. And don't you ever forget, ain't no law when you're drinking the claw. He is Will Brinson, good friend of the program. Will, great job as always. Nice to have you back. Thanks for doing that.
Always fun, Jim. Have a great day.
Good night.